This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Their Lost Daughters, written by Joy Ellis, performed by Richard Armitage. Chapter 1. For a second, Jackman lay still. Then his eyes flew open and he grabbed his mobile phone from the bedside table.
Rowan Jackman.
It's Sergeant Danny Page here, Inspector. Sorry for the early call, but we've just received a report of a body on the beach over at Dawnsmere. Jackman gritted his teeth. His present investigation involved a missing teenager.
A body, Sergeant?
There was the slightest pause.
Yes, sir. And I'm afraid it is a young woman. Although that's all we know until someone can get out there. I've got two cars responding, but I'm assuming you would like to deal with this.
Jackman was already out of bed.
On my way, Sergeant. Would you please alert DS Evans for me and ask her to meet me at the scene? And you'd better get the pathologist and some soccos down there as well.
Consider it done, sir.
His shower could wait. Jackman threw open his wardrobe and grabbed a pair of chinos, a warm shirt and a thick sweater. The coast was bitterly cold at this time of year, especially just before dawn. He pulled them on, found a pair of hiking socks, and ran down the wooden staircase and into the hall. He chose walking boots from the rack by the door, checked that he had his warrant card, mobile and wallet all safe in his pocket, and took his old barber wax jacket from the hook and pulled it on. He locked the door to his converted mill house and ran across the drive to where his car was parked beneath a covered gazebo. He rarely used his garage, preferring the option of a quick getaway. Like now. First light was a weak, watery and dismal affair, but today the chilly grey dawn was probably more appropriate than one of Mother Nature's more dazzling displays. Jackman gazed around. For a moment or two, he tried not to look at the very thing he had come there for. It would have been generous to call it a beach. Dawnsmere was a bleak spot, a narrow strip of sand and dunes sandwiched between the wild marsh and the cold, uninviting waters of the Wash. But even so, it had a strange beauty, even if that beauty was lonely and austere. The thing that always struck Jackman about these long stretches of Fenland coastline was the absence of almost any indication of humanity. There were no colourful beach huts, no deck chairs, no cafes, and no amusements. Just the landscape and the sea. Right now, if you chose to ignore the presence of the police and their sad find, it looked almost primeval. Gathering himself, Jackman silently ordered his inner philosopher to retreat to a safe distance, and called upon the seasoned policeman to step forward and take charge. The dead girl lay on her side, her bloated face half buried in the wet, muddy sand. Her clothes clung to her in rags, and her feet were bare. Jackman stared at the slender, narrow ankles and saw scratches and cuts etched deep into the pale skin. He looked closer and frowned. There were bruises, too. Lots of them. He tried not to get ahead of himself. Foul play was always his first thought, but submersion in water could cause massive injuries to the body. He knew only too well that the tides could buffet a frail human against rocks and debris, inflicting all manner of trauma. Jackman reached into his jacket pocket and removed a photograph. The picture showed a slim youngster with shoulder-length light brown hair. A girl with laughing green eyes, a narrow, delicate nose and a wide, toothy smile. He stared back down at the lifeless tangle of clothes and unnaturally white flesh and shook his head. It could be Shauna Kelly, but it would take more than a happy snap to identify her. He drew in a long sigh. Their missing girl had no tattoos, scars, or other identifying marks, so they would have to resort to dental records, unless one of the distraught parents insisted on seeing her. Frankly, Jackman would walk over hot coals to prevent that happening. He looked at the body, trying to make some kind of positive connection with the smiling girl in the photo, but apart from similar-length hair, there was nothing.
Wicked waste. Poor little kid.
A uniformed officer was standing a little way away, viciously stabbing the toe of his boot over and over into the wet sand. Jackman recognized the man as being one of the messroom jokers, a right laugh-a-minute maestro under normal conditions. He looked at Jackman and hung his head.
Sorry, sir. Got three girls of me own.
Jackman threw him an understanding smile, followed by a lifeline.
Do me a favor, Constable. Go and see whether D.S. Evans has arrived yet.
The constable nodded, straightened up and loped away from the scene. Left alone with the girl, Jackman wondered, not for the first time, how they coped with so much death. Dead adults were bad enough. Babies were beyond devastating. And children tore his heart out. But teenagers affected him in a different way altogether. There seemed to be so much loss attached to juveniles. They had nearly made it. Almost become what they were intended to be. All that potential was suddenly gone. Their untapped talents wiped out in the blink of an eye, and their young dreams stolen forever. The light breeze off the sea rippled the shallow puddles of water that surrounded the girl, making her sodden clothes move slightly. Just for a moment, in the poor light, she seemed to be alive. Jackman shivered, and then voices echoed across the narrow dune-edged beach and dragged him away from his somber thoughts. D.S. Marie Evans was hurrying towards him, accompanied by the county's forensic pathologist, Professor Rory Wilkinson. Jackman was glad that the man himself had turned out this morning and not delegated the task to another. Wilkinson was an oddball, but much better than his predecessor. Jackman had always struggled with Arthur Jacobs. He knew that the old pathologist was competent and indeed very clever, but Jackman found him cold and spiritless, and working with him was hard going. Rory Wilkinson was at the other end of the spectrum, and once Jackman had seen past the high camp humour, he realized that Sultan Le Fen was very lucky to have him. Not that there would be much in the way of banter today. Marie arrived a few steps ahead of the pathologist. She must have left home as swiftly as he had, but her motorcycle leathers concealed the evidence. She looked wide awake. He supposed that riding a big Suzuki V-Strom 650cc bike in the cold of the early morning would probably do that.
"Is it her?"
she breathed. He shrugged.
"Take a look for yourself. I'm not sure."
He turned to Wilkinson and nodded a greeting.
"Glad you're the one to turn out this morning, Rory. By the look of it, I'm really going to need your help and expertise."
"Oh, but you always need my help, Inspector. And you might be happy that I'm freezing my bollocks off on the edge of the North Sea at 5 a.m, but I'm not so sure. My fluffy duvet is still calling out to me."
Rory stepped towards the dead girl and dropped the act immediately.
"The jungle drums tell me that she may belong to one of our people."
Jackman noticed the softness to his tone.
"It could be.
We've been looking for a runaway for the last 3 days. Shauna Kelly, 14-year-old daughter of Liz Kelly, a civilian who works in the control room."
"The age is probably similar," murmured the pathologist, kneeling down and gently inspecting his new charge. "But I'll have to get her back to the morgue before I can tell you anything constructive."
He stood up and pushed his wire-rimmed glasses further up onto the bridge of his nose.
"And I'm afraid I have to warn you that it's not easy with these particular cases. Sometimes it's almost impossible to determine the manner of death from a post-mortem. Maybe the lungs and the sinuses will turn up something, but our best bet will be a complete toxicological analysis, so don't rush me, okay? I promise to do my best, and I'm fully aware it's high priority."
He beckoned to a soccer who was waiting tentatively near the dunes.
Time to shine, my friend. I want photographs and a very careful examination.
He turned back to Jackman.
We'll get her shipped out ASAP. It's the best I can do. And I hate to say this, but right now I know little more than you. The poor kid is dead, and it didn't happen in the last few hours. She's been in the water for quite a while.
He drew in a whistling breath and stared hard at Jackman.
Sorry, but I'm passing the buck back to you, D.I. Jackman. You need to discover the circumstances behind this girl's death, and then we'll try to tie it in with my findings.
I need to know who she is before I can do that, said Jackman grimly.
Well, there are two simple ways that you can either confirm or eliminate Shauna Cayley. Bring in the next of kin to identify her, or failing that, wait for the dental records report.
He gave them a rather sad smile.
And I'm pretty sure which of the two options you guys will go for.
He picked up his bag.
And now, as I have no wish to hear what I'm sure will be a simply divine dawn chorus, I'm going to get back and make arrangements for this poor girl.
Jackman and Marie watched him stride back up the beach.
What they call an acquired taste, I believe.
Marie grinned.
I've acquired it already. He's good. In fact, he's one of the best I've come across.
Agreed.
They walked to a quiet spot further up the beach, a little way away from the blue lights and the gathering uniforms. Jackman sat on a low stone wall that edged the dunes.
What do you know about the tides along this stretch, Marie?
Jackman asked. She sucked on her bottom lip.
Not much, but I know a man who does. Jack Archer, a real webfoot if ever there was one. He lived way out on the marsh for most of his life. His dad and granddad were eel catchers. Now he's in an old people's place just outside your village. Social services moved him off the marsh when he took ill and there was no one to look after him. He knows these fens better than anyone.
Go see him, Marie.
Tell him the exact spot where the girl washed up, and ask him if he could give us an idea of what part of the coast she went in from. If he knows the area that well, he might be able to help us.
Okay. He's in his 80s, but I reckon he'll still be an early riser. I'll grab a shower and then go round and see him as soon as it's properly light.
Jackman took in the sight of the liquid gold sun breaking through the grey marbled sky and reflecting across the quicksilver waters of the wash.
Look at that, he said softly. This place is something else, isn't it? If it weren't for that poor kid lying on the beach, it would be magical.
It's still magical, said Marie softly. And let's consider it a blessing that we have her back from the deep, whoever she is.
Jackman took one last glance back to the beach and was glad to see that the girl was no longer visible. A group of police and scene of crime officers were working around her now. Soon she would be lifted up from the cold, wet sand and taken back to Rory's mortuary, where hopefully she would see fit to give up her secrets to the one man who was able to hear. Chapter 2 Jackman was up to his neck in reports when Marie got back from seeing Jack Archer.
Waste of time? He queried, noting her unusually serious expression.
No, far from it. He's a great old guy, really helpful.
Marie placed two coffees on his desk and pushed the office door closed.
So why the mardy face?
Oh, nothing, sir. It's just the thought of that lovely young girl dying in that manner.
Jackman closed the file that he was working on and pointed to a chair.
Sit.
He helped himself to one of the coffees and a handful of sugar sachets. As he tore open the tiny packets and shook them into his drink, he looked at her thoughtfully. Marie was a handsome woman. She was tall with long, rich brunette hair and an upright stance that still turned heads at 46 years old. She had an Amazonian quality that she used to full advantage with both villains and coppers alike. The consensus of opinion in the messroom was, "Don't mess with Super Mario." Jackman knew a different side of Marie. Compassionate and gentle, but very, very astute. He trusted her opinions and her judgments. Their upbringing and backgrounds could not be more different, but they shared a deep love for their chosen career, and although they reached their conclusions by different paths, they usually agreed in the end.
Why has this one hit you so hard, my friend? You've seen more than your fair share of deaths.
Marie shrugged.
My very first case was a drowning. Another youngster, not much different to the last this morning. We never managed to identify her.
She pushed her hair back over her shoulder and reached for her coffee.
I always felt we let her and her family down. We never traced them and no one came forward. But she must have a family somewhere. It seems so awful that she was never taken home to rest.
We can't help them all, Marie. We do our best, but sometimes the odds are stacked against us.
Do you think that girl was Shauna Kelly?
My gut feeling says yes, but I don't want to go down that route until we get those dental records back.
Marie nodded and sipped her coffee.
No matter who she is, we have to find out exactly what happened to her, and if it was no accident...
She left the sentence unfinished.
Oh, yes. But tell me what your ancient local had to say about those tides.
Marie placed a dog-eared map of the coastline on his desk and smoothed it out.
Jack Archer thinks that the girl went into the water around this area here.
She tapped the map.
Allenby Creek. The tides, the currents, and the recent light winds all make this the most likely spot unless she fell from a boat. We just have to hope that isn't the case.
Allenby Creek? That's a remote spot, isn't it?
Marie stared at the map.
It's on the borders of our patch and Harlan Marsh. And yes, that area is all farmland and wild salt marsh.
Come to think of it, I remember it from when I was a kid. There used to be one accessible beach there. It was close to the old seal sanctuary at Herne Point.
Hmm.
Marie's slender finger moved slowly along the coast.
Ah, yes, I see where you mean. Shall I ask Uniform to go check it out for us?
I'd rather we went ourselves.
Jackman gnawed on his bottom lip.
But no, you're right. I need to get these reports sorted before the end of the day, and Uniform are more than capable of dealing with it.
He lifted his desk phone.
I'll see if the duty sergeant could get a crew over there to take a look around, maybe ask some questions of the locals.
A few moments later, he replaced the receiver.
Sorted.
Sir?
The door opened and the tousled head of DC Charlie Button, the youngest member of their team, pushed through the gap.
Sorry to interrupt, but Superintendent Crook would like to see both of you in her office.
Jackman thanked the young detective and swallowed the rest of his coffee.
Oh dear. Both of us? That sounds ominous.
Marie stood up.
Let's get it over with and pray that it has nothing to do with budget, spending cuts, performance, or targets.
Or all four at once.
Jackman smiled ruefully.
It has been known.
Superintendent Ruth Crook was a narrow-lipped woman who looked permanently pissed off, probably because she usually was. It took a lot to stir any emotion other than a negative one in the super, and when she summoned you, it was advisable to jump to it. Marie took the stairs two at a time to keep up with Jackman. She didn't look forward to entering the lioness's den, but she had worked with the superintendent for long enough to know that if you could get past the hard, controlling exterior and the acerbic tongue, there was a damn good policewoman underneath. And that was what really counted. Marie walked in behind Jackman and bestowed on the super her very best radiant smile. It failed to bring even the slightest movement to those tight, thin lips. Superintendent Ruth Crook gestured irritably to the only two chairs available in the room and launched into a lengthy complaint about whoever she'd just been speaking to.
I've had some damned financial analyst bleating down my ear for the last 10 minutes, and I swear he's never set foot in a police station in his whole life. Every initiative he came up with was bloody crap.
She flung a notebook across her desk and leaned back in her chair.
Not that I think he'll be phoning back. I told him exactly why his money-saving theories should be flushed down the pan. I don't know how you do it, ma'am, said Jackman. Your job would have my brains turning into minestrone in 5 minutes flat.
She shrugged.
Well, someone has to. And what I do rather well. At least you guys have someone fighting your corner. For instance, last time I looked,
You still had radios, Kevlar vests and cars, or something changed since I last went downstairs? Jackman smiled. Marine knew that although he didn't like the boss much, he had a grudging admiration for anyone who could juggle budgets and targets.
No, we're still communicating, protected and mobile. And thank heavens, because I don't think we'd do too well trying to police these fens on bicycles.
He sat back and gazed across the oversized shiny desk. Ruth Crook shook her head.
Anyway, as talking to you two about anything other than criminal activity is a complete waste of my valuable time, I'll save my breath.
She pushed a thick folder across the table towards them. Marie saw the name on it, and a shiver went through her. Kenya Black.
We have some pressure on us. It's a cold case, I know, but the mother has decided to resurrect her campaign. She's trying to get the press to run with it again, but big style this time. She's attracting interest from some famous faces and using social media to really stir things up.
She gave a little shrug.
Can't blame the poor soul, of course, but we won't look good if we're doing sweet FA, so upstairs want it put to bed permanently. It was never closed, and although I know that you are dealing with Shauna Kelly's disappearance, I specifically want your team to take this one, and I want you to make it your number one priority.
Jackman sat bolt upright in his chair.
My God, it must have been 7 or 8 years since Kenya disappeared, and you're making it high priority.
Everyone in the area knew about the disappearance of the little girl. But as neither Jackman nor Marie had been directly involved in the case, the finer details were hazy. Jackman frowned.
I know it was put on the back burner, but it is still an ongoing investigation. Surely one of the other teams went over the whole thing less than 3 months ago.
They did, but science and forensics move forward every day.
Marie racked her brain for information. Emblazoned across her mind was a photograph that the media latched onto at the time. A child with white blonde hair sitting on a beanbag with her pet dog. She wore jeans and a yellow hooded sweatshirt with a teddy bear motif on it. Her small fingers were clinging to the animal's fur. She was the epitome of angelic. This heart-wrencher had instigated the biggest public-supported hunt that the Fens had ever known. Marie frowned. Memories were coming back like flashes from a newsreel.
Someone thought they saw her, didn't they? With another child playing close to the seal reserve out at Herne Point.
And a week later, one of her trainers was found washed up on the beach 3 miles up the coast from the sighting, which gave credence to the man's report.
The super's face was stony.
And it was assumed that she'd been swept out to sea.
Marie remembered the tabloid headline. Was it murder? Or just a terrible accident?
That's the long and the short of it. The parents were well off, but no ransom demand ever came. No more evidence was found and there was no more reported sightings. Well, none other than the usual crank ones. And after a while it was decided that she had most probably drowned, and we were forced to scale down the investigation.
But now you want us to give it priority again? Asked Jackman.
We want you to start at the beginning and go through it with fresh eyes and a considerably enhanced budget should you need it.
The superintendent looked at Jackman with an unnerving intensity.
I want this case closed for good. And although we don't always see eye to eye, I have to admit that your team has something about it. I don't know what it is, but if anyone can find out what happened to that little girl and get this wretched case sewn up, I believe it's you.
Jackman took up the file and stared at it. Marie felt a strange sensation course through her. Excitement was not quite the right word. It was more like trepidation. No one who had worked the original investigation had brought into the accident theory, but after years of fruitless digging it had been taken out of their hands. So maybe it was time for a new team to try to provide her grieving family with some sort of closure. Jackman stood up.
We'll give it our very best shot, ma'am. You can depend on that.
But Shauna Kelly has to come first right now. And if that girl who drowned is her, I'm not going to compromise these early days of the inquiry. She belongs to one of our own, and although I wouldn't treat it differently to any other death, we do feel deeply for her mother.
Of course, I'd expect no less.
And if you need help, ask, okay? Ruth Crook stared at them. But don't procrastinate over the cold case either. There's a lot at stake with this. When I said the powers that be want it dealt with swiftly, I meant it. Understood? The interview was over. Marie's instincts shouted that this investigation was going to be far from simple. They walked towards the lifts.
Kenya Black.
Jackman almost whispered the name.
I never saw that coming.
Me neither, replied Marie.
How do you feel about taking this on?
Asked Jackman.
Well, of course we should. The super's right. The family needs answers and maybe new eyes will see something different.
That's not what I asked.
Jackman levelled his eyes at hers.
How do you feel about it?
They slowed their pace.
If I'm honest, and I have no idea why I feel this way, I'm quite troubled by the thought of tackling this investigation.
As they entered the lift, Jackman nodded.
Me too. From the moment I saw that file, with that name on it, my stomach has been doing somersaults.
He drew in a long, shaky breath.
But you're right. It's time that dreadful case was closed.
So we'd better get our heads together and sort it, don't you think? In the silence as the lift descended, Marie had a strong sense of foreboding. Chapter 3 Jackman and Marie went directly into his office and closed the door. Jackman sat down heavily in his old leather captain's chair and swung round to face Marie.
I need to get my head around this before we tell the team. I'm not sure how we're going to juggle it all. It's going to take quite a bit of strategic planning.
Marie puffed out her cheeks.
Well, the super seemed absolutely determined that we'd be the ones to tackle the case, even if we are already working the Shauna Kelly investigation.
She was almost complimentary about the team, wasn't she?
But thinking about it, there really is only us, isn't there? Our counterparts are up to their ears in tying up that big fraud case and getting it ready for the CPS. They certainly couldn't tackle something on this scale. And D.I. Andy Feltham's team are way understaffed due to illness and accident.
Jackman made to answer, but was interrupted by a knock at the door. D.C. Max Cohen entered, carrying a large sealed envelope.
Sorry, boss, but I think you want to see this. It's from the pathologist, marked urgent.
Thanks, Max. We'll be out in a moment, so perhaps you could get hold of Charlie. We'll meet you in the CID room in 10 for a briefing, okay? As the door closed, Jackman stared at the manila envelope in front of him. His name was written across the front in Rory Wilkinson's version of Gothic script. An awful lot rested on what this brief report would tell them. Not least the fact that he might have to break it to one of his own staff that her daughter was dead. From the moment he had seen the girl on the beach, Jackman's gut feeling was that she hadn't fallen, and she hadn't jumped. He frowned and tore open the envelope. The dental records confirmed that the drowned girl was Shauna Kelly. Without a word, he passed the sheet to Marie. Marie sighed.
I so hoped.
I guess we know what our next step is.
A very sad visit to Liz Kelly. We'll do it together, shall we? We've both known Liz for quite a time, and I'm sure she'll appreciate it coming from people she's familiar with.
Jackman nodded.
I wish we had more to tell her.
Whatever we say today will be lost on her. The only words she'll hear are the ones telling her that her child is dead.
Jackman stood up.
You go tell Max and Charlie about this, and I'll notify the super.
He grimaced.
And then we'll go and break the news to Liz.
And Kenya Black? Shall I tell the others?
No.
Let's get something rolling regarding Shauna. Kenya Black has been gone a very long time, so a few more days won't make any difference. Whereas we need to really move on Shauna's investigation while there may be evidence to gather and people's memories are still fresh.
We'll go, sir.
Marie strode outside to find the others, and Jackman made his second visit in 20 minutes to the superintendent's office. Ruth Crook looked almost haggard.
So what do we actually know about Shauna?
We have no idea what happened to her yet, ma'am. Rory Wilkinson is treating it as a priority, so we just have to hope that something shows up in the post-mortem that will determine whether foul play was involved.
He pushed a hand through his thick, light brown hair.
Apparently, Shauna was always a handful, but not a bad kid. 6 months ago, her father left home and things got worse. She started drinking, and Liz told me that she's had trouble keeping her away from some of the wilder kids in town.
And the night she went missing?
Max and Charlie have located her 3 times on CCTV, all around the town centre area. The last sighting was of her laughing with a man, close to the Lincoln Arms public house on Brewer Street. Drunk? Not paralytic, but probably tipsy. Jackman thought back to the footage Max had shown him. One thing stood out, though. From the way she was acting, we're all certain that she knew the man. The image of him is poor, but Max has enhanced it as much as he can, and Uniform are taking it out on the streets for us.
Not much to go on.
It's better than nothing, ma'am. We could get lucky.
Let's hope. Now, to help out, I've got you another detective. DC Rosie McKeldry from D.I. Felton's team is at a loose end. So, for the duration of this inquiry, she's all yours.
Thank you, ma'am. I like Rosie. She has the makings of a very good detective.
Look closer. She's already a very good detective.
Jackman grinned. Point taken.
He pushed back his chair.
I better go, ma'am. I need to tell Liz Kelly before the grapevine does it for me.
Ruth looked at him and he saw sympathy in her eyes.
Get her the best family liaison officer that we have, Rowan.
I'll notify them further up the chain and she'll be offered every help, but...
That poor woman.
I know, and I can't say I'm looking forward to this.
I'm sure you're not. It's the worst part of this job and no mistake.
She gave him a rare smile.
But you'll do it properly. I know that.
Jackman hoped she was right. It was after 2 p.m. by the time Jackman gathered the team together for a full briefing. His meeting with Liz Kelly had been extremely harrowing. The sound of the woman's anguished cry still rang in his ears. He was under no illusion about the Kenya Black case. He knew he had been handed a poisoned chalice. That case had a reputation, a bad one. It didn't help that one of the detectives on the original investigation had topped himself over it. Jackman gritted his teeth and swore silently that whatever happened, he'd never let any of his colleagues get to that state, or anywhere near it. He watched his small team move around the large incident room. They had no idea what he was going to say, but they had picked up on his tension. Jackman knew that this investigation, if successful, could affect all their futures in a big way. The disappearance of Kenya Black was referred to as one of the great unsolved crimes of the decade. To be part of the team that finally brought the truth to light could be a career maker, and even he felt a rush of nervous enthusiasm. But first, he had to update them on Shauna Kelly.
Before we get down to it, I'd like to welcome DC Rosie McKeldry to the team. She's lending a hand as we will be running 2 investigations.
He nodded towards a young fair-haired woman who sat a little apart from the others. Rosie had an elfin face with fine boned features and greenish blue eyes. She looked much younger than her 24 years, but Jackman knew she had a quick brain and a knack for picking up discrepancies in statements. She was also in possession of an extremely good memory. The young detective raised a hand and smiled at them.
Happy to help?
Jackman leaned back against the wall.
Now, as I just said, we are going to be working 2 cases in tandem. The first, as you will all know by now, is that of the death of Shauna Kelly. Before we can make too much headway with this, we will need the forensic reports and the prelim should be with us by tomorrow morning. If it's foul play, then we have a murder inquiry. To get one step ahead, I want you to keep working on finding the identity of the man that Shauna was seen talking to on the CCTV, and also go back to all of her friends and contemporaries. Someone must know something about Shauna, something that led up to her either going missing or being abducted. He took a breath. And the second case is something that you youngsters will have to do a lot of homework on because, he paused, we are about to take a closer look at the Kenya Black inquiry. There was a collective intake of breath.
Blimey, that's a turn up for the books.
Max's Cockney accent came to the fore.
Yes, said Jackman.
And to be honest, even Marie and I will need to do some in-depth reading on this case as neither of us were around at the time. So, Marie, where are we at?
Well, I've already called the evidence storage facility. They are releasing the evidence containers later this afternoon. I reckon we'll need a forklift to get all the boxes over here.
I'll want some items sent directly to the forensic lab. I've already alerted Professor Wilkinson about it. Rory Wilkinson was usually based in Greenborough, but for the time being he had decided to work at the county hospital mortuary on the outskirts of Salton Town. He had immediately offered to help. His willingness didn't surprise Jackman. The entire country had been mesmerized by the search for little Kenya Black. I haven't had time yet to go over everything, but a swift glance gives me a distinct impression that the last review of this case was something of a balls-up. Jackman thumbed through a sheaf of reports. Marie nodded.
Quite possibly, sir. That last review took place at the time when we were being overhauled. Civilians were being brought in for a lot of jobs that some thought should have been done by coppers. Plus, that case has been dragged out of mothballs more times than I've had hot dinners. Maybe their hearts weren't in it.
Probably not. But that's not going to happen this time. We are going to find out what happened to that little girl if we have to spend every damned penny of the super's generous budget. We will find Kenya, or at least discover exactly what occurred.
D.I. Jackman?
A uniformed officer entered the room and handed Jackman a memo.
The man you're looking for from the CCTV has been identified by PC Kevin Stoner. He believes the man works in the area where the girl was last seen.
Jackman summarized the memo. His name is Asher Layton. He's not actually known to us, but it seems he has been warned a couple of times for curb crawling.
Which doesn't bode well, does it? Said Marie.
No, Jackman thought, it doesn't. Sometimes the next step up from hassling women on the street was taking them away.
Have they got an address for him, sir?
Granary Court on Norfolk Street, the garden flat.
Posh pad for a pervert. Granary Court is one of the most expensive locations in Salton.
Max sounded almost envious. I think we should go and have a word with Mr. Asher Layton, don't you? Jackman looked at Marie. Marie took a set of keys from her pocket.
No time like the present. There's a fleet car downstairs.
The door to the garden flat was opened by a petite young woman with long wavy blonde hair and perfectly made-up eyes. She wore skinny jeans with a cream cowl-neck top and a wide studded leather belt. Marie decided she had the look of a wag about her.
Asher?
She stared at their official identification cards and the eyes became even larger.
Oh dear, Detective Inspector, I'm afraid he's not here. When do you expect him back, miss?
Asked Marie. The girl smiled, treating them to a display of top-quality orthodontic work.
Not until late, I'm afraid. He's working until around 10 o'clock.
Dazzled by the teeth, Jackman tried not to squint. And you are? He asked.
Linda Cowley. I'm Ash's fiancée.
Her smile faded.
He's all right, isn't he? I mean, he's not been in an accident or anything.
Jackman gave her a reassuring smile.
No, it's nothing like that, Miss Cowley.
We just need a word with him. Maybe you could tell us where he works or give us his mobile phone number. The girl still looked worried.
He works for a company on George Street, Hanson & Co., but he won't be there. He's at a meeting this afternoon, and then he's going on to a client dinner tonight.
Of course I'll give you his number, but he switches his mobile off when he's busy. Do you know where this dinner is taking place?
Marie was feeling slightly twitchy about his being so conveniently out of contact. The girl shook her head slowly, and the long blonde hair swung gently from side to side like a TV advert for shampoo.
He didn't say.
Client dinner my arse, thought Marie, recalling Asher Layton's penchant for a little late-night curb-crawling. She handed the girl her card.
Well, please give him this. Get him to ring us the moment he returns, Miss Cowley, no matter how late, okay?
Or fail him now. Get him to ring us first thing in the morning as a matter of some urgency, added Jackman.
Can I tell him what it's about, Inspector? I know he'll worry if I tell him the police want to talk to him.
I'm sure he will, Marie thought.
We need to speak to anyone who might have been on Brewer Street a few evenings ago, that's all. Brewer Street is directly opposite George Street where Asher works, isn't it?
Jackman nodded. Linda Cowley looked somewhat relieved.
I'll give him your message.
As they walked back to the car, Marie said,
Just how gullible do you think one person can be?
About as gullible as that, I should say.
Jackman shook his head.
Poor kid.
She only looked about 16. How old do you think she really is?
Probably closer to 20, maybe even older.
I think she's another Rosie. Looks much younger than she really is. Marie frowned.
Is it worth a trip around to Hanson and Co?
I got the feeling he won't be there.
And Linda was right. I've just checked the mobile number she gave us for him and it is switched off. Jackman mused. We'd better make use of our time by returning to the station and putting wheels into motion. There's one heck of a lot to do.
Will he contact us, I wonder?
Marie clicked the remote on the car keys.
We can but hope.
And if he doesn't, in the words of Arnie Schwarzenegger, I'll be back.
Chapter 4
Hours later, as the darkness enveloped the fen, two youngsters, unsteady in their high heels, tottered along the pavements of Harlan Marsh Town.
Are you sure this is the place?
Jasmine drew her thin top closer to her skinny body and shivered.
This is it, said Chloe. I followed Paul here last week. I watched him go in.
The two girls looked dubious at the rusting wrought iron fencing that surrounded the concrete steps and the peeling paintwork on the old door, down in the shadows of the basement area.
Well, nothing's happening tonight, that's for sure. Let's go home, Chloe. This place is a dump. It gives me the creeps.
Jasmine had been unenthusiastic about gate-crashing the party from the outset. Chloe frowned.
But I sneaked a look at his mobile. There was a new message saying that it was on tonight, and I know this is where my brother came before. Maybe it was cancelled at the last minute.
Jasmine shifted from foot to foot. It'd been a stupid idea anyway. So what if there was free booze? She didn't even like the taste of alcohol. And if her dad found out, he would go apeshit and probably ground her for the rest of the year.
Can I help you, young ladies?
The voice was friendly enough. Jasmine turned around to see an older man smiling at them. He had a short, fashionable haircut, trendy clothes, and was carrying a large case of wine bottles.
You the geezer who runs the parties?
Asked Chloe. The man narrowed his eyes.
What parties?
Chloe jabbed a finger towards the case of wine.
So you're going to drink that lot all on your own, are you?
Smart kid.
He grinned at her and placed the heavy box on the ground.
So, are you two club members?
Jasmine felt a stab of anxiety and wished again that they'd never left home.
Course we are, said Chloe, trying to look bored. Why else would we be here? And my mobile phone message definitely said it was on, so...
The man shook his head.
But you never received the venue change? Oh, well, I'm sorry about that.
Must have been some sort of mix-up.
Oh, great,
Chloe snorted.
So if it's not here, where is it? We don't want to spend all night on the frigging pavement.
The man looked from one girl to the other.
Funny. I've never seen either of you before.
and I've got a pretty good memory for faces. Jasmine took hold of Chloe's arm.
Come on, Chloe, just leave it. No way.
Chloe pushed Jasmine away and placed her hands on her hips.
These guys have cocked up, end of. Just because we're new, it doesn't mean we should miss out on a party, does it, Grandad?
The man, who couldn't have been more than 30, tilted his head and stared at them for a moment. How old are you? He asked.
I'm 17, said Chloe quickly. And she's 16, if it's any of your business.
ID. An odd look of interest or maybe amusement passed across the man's face when Chloe told him that they had left them at home. Jasmine began to shiver again. She hated it when Chloe lied about their age. She knew they looked much older than 14, but this was beginning to get uncomfortable.
Sorry, but I'm going, Chloe. You do what you want.
She turned to walk away. Okay, okay. The man shook his head and grinned at them. You win. The venue is in Carter's Way tonight. There's an old warehouse. It's about halfway down on the left-hand side. There's a side door and... He stopped and gave a little sigh. Oh, wait here. I've got another of these crates to collect and then I'm going down there myself. I'll take you if you like, by way of an apology for the muddle with the text.
It's the least you can do,
said Chloe. Jasmine threw her friend a horrified look as the man walked a few doors down and disappeared into a rather shabby house.
You can't get into his car alone, Chloe. Don't be totally stupid. We never do that, never. Then come with me. It'll be fun. We've practically got him eaten out of our hands. Lighten up, Jasmine, for God's sake. My brother thinks these parties are the coolest thing ever. Really wicked. Free drink all night, music, dancing, snogging, anything you want.
She lowered her voice.
And I mean anything. He didn't know I was listening, but I heard Paul telling his spotty mate Darren that he actually did it with his girlfriend. Can you believe that?
Jasmine didn't even want to think about it. The thought of Paul and his skanky girlfriend jammed up against a wall made her feel ill. Doing it, as Chloe had put it, should be special. Jasmine wanted flowers, candles and a big soft bed for her first time, not some dingy basement surrounded by pissheads.
I'll go on me own, Jazz. Honest, I will. You can't. What if your brother turns up? He'll kill you if he finds you there. And he'll know you've been snooping through his mobile. He won't. He's gone to a concert in Sheffield.
Chloe looked along the deserted streets as a door closed further down.
Please, Jazz. Let's just see what it's like. If you don't like it, we'll go home, I promise.
She watched the approaching man.
And he's harmless. You can tell just by looking at him.
2 minutes later, Jasmine reluctantly followed Chloe into the back of the car. She knew she was making a seriously big mistake, but there was no way she could have watched her best friend drive away alone. It was close to 9 when Marie finally got home. She was tired but pleased with the amount of work they had managed to do. They all knew that it was going to be full on from the moment they set foot in the station the next day, so it made sense to get the groundwork done. Marie opened the fridge and selected a light M&S ready meal for her supper, and to go with it a glass of chilled rosé wine. She was just about to pop her food into the microwave when the phone rang.
Marie?
She smiled to herself. Why did her mother always sound so surprised when she answered?
As I live alone and to my knowledge the cat hasn't yet mastered answering the phone, yes, Mum, it's me.
A tinkle of laughter drifted down the phone.
Just checking, sweetheart.
Marie loved the soft Welsh lilt to her mother's voice. It had soothed her as a child, and in times of trouble it still did.
How are you, Mum? More to the point, how are you? You've been on my mind all day, Marie. Have you got a big investigation going on?
They didn't call her Mum Rhiannon Roberts, the Welsh witch, for nothing.
Funny you should say that. We're just embarking on what could be a very worrying one indeed. Well, you know where I am if you want to offload.
Marie sipped her wine.
Who else would I do that to? So stand by, you could be in demand over the next few weeks.
Sounds big.
Massive. No, even bigger than that, and high profile too, so keep an eye on the papers. You might just see your daughter's name in print.
I promise not to believe a word they say.
Her mum laughed again, and Marie felt a stab of longing. She wished that her mother was not so far away in the wilds of Wales.
When are you coming up next? The spare room's always made up ready.
I'll come if you really need me. You know I will.
Marie understood. Her mother had other people who needed her too. Ria ran a kind of retreat-come-hostel, come-food-bank, come-drop-in-centre, for anyone and everyone who needed help. She also helped out at the local school and delivered prescriptions to disabled villagers for the doctor's surgery. In short, she was an angel disguised in knitted cardigans, long flowing skirts and Doc Martens. Her mum was a one-off, and Marie adored her. When Marie's husband Bill had been killed in a motorcycle crash, Ria had kept her going. Her mother had pulled her through, and now Marie believed she was a stronger woman for it. They spoke for a few minutes longer, then Marie promised to ring her mother the following night.
Be careful, Marie. I sense that you will be under a lot of strain over the coming weeks. Eat well and try to sleep as much as you can. Tired workers don't function well, and that could be dangerous.
You sound like Jackman.
That's one of his favourites.
Then he's a sensible man. Listen to him. And, Marie, if you do need me, I'll be there. You know that, don't you?
Of course I do. Love you. Sleep tight.
Don't let the bedbugs bite.
Marie replaced the phone on its holder. Her mother had a sixth sense where her daughter was concerned. The young Marie could not tell a lie or try to cover anything up because her mother always knew. And if things were worrying her, no matter where she was, 9 times out of 10 her mother would ring. She put her meal into the microwave, thinking that it was a bit like having a guardian angel watching over her. And in her line of business, that was no bad thing to have. It took Jackman longer to get back to Mill Corner than it took Marie to get home. His village of Cartoft was a drive of 15 minutes or so from Sultan Le Fen station. He locked his car and walked across to the mill house, balancing several folders and a box file in his arms. The smell of something delicious cooking met him at the door. He dropped his paperwork on the kitchen table and found the note left by Mrs. Maynard. Mr. Jackman, I've left you a hot pot simmering on the stove, and Mr. M. said the lavender wagon will be here tomorrow, but he'll see to it. Hetty. Jackman smiled and wondered what he would do without the old couple who looked after him. Before he did anything, he wrote a check for the drainage company who would be emptying the septic tank. Len's Lavender Wagon. Cartoft was not on Maine's drainage, so every 2 or 3 years they had the dubious pleasure of the emptying ceremony. Jackman grinned to himself. Yet another reason to be grateful for the Maynards. He helped himself to a large bowl of the beef stew, turned on the radio and sat down at the old pine table. He glanced at the pile of reports and decided that his homework could wait until he had eaten. For the next 15 minutes, Jackman listened to Classic FM and enjoyed his supper, until the magnetic attraction of the Kenya Black files became too much for him. He rinsed his bowl and placed it in the dishwasher, then returned to the table and opened the reports. They made depressing reading. It was clear that Kenya's mother, Grace Black, had worked tirelessly to keep her daughter's unexplained disappearance in the public eye for as long as possible. Every time interest faded, she found a way to rekindle the flame. But almost a decade on, no new information had come to light. Jackman knew they had a daunting task ahead of them, but it was a battle he was determined to win. Grace Black deserved to have someone fighting beside her, and his team, along with an enhanced budget and new advances in technology, might be able to give the distraught mother hope or closure. Jackman shivered. He could only guess at the anguish Grace Black suffered, not knowing if her child were dead or alive, wondering whether, if she was dead, had she suffered, and if she was alive, what sort of life was she living? The dark imaginings that must haunt her waking hours and sleepless nights were hard to even begin to contemplate. Jackman abruptly stood up and walked across the kitchen to where the coffee pot lived. He put the kettle on the stove and spooned rich, dark Kenyan coffee into the percolator. He needed a strong caffeine hit if he were to read more of this heartbreaking stuff. Tomorrow he would visit Grace and tell her that he was going to move heaven and earth to find out what had happened to her beautiful daughter. Just as he had said to Liz Kelly earlier that day. "Liz, we'll find out what happened to Shauna. And if someone is to blame, then we'll bring them to justice. You have my word that we will not rest until we can give you answers." Liz had not replied. He had not expected her to. The poor woman was in a private hell, and no words could ease the raw pain of the news that he had had to deliver. "What a shitty world we live in," he murmured to the singing kettle. Then he thought of his team, all of them dedicated, determined to help make things better. "No, the world's not all shit. There are just some seriously shitty people in it," he said to himself. Chapter 5 Marie rode away from her village early next morning, marveling at the skyscape before her. The low farmland still held onto a carpet of diaphanous mist, and the sky above it was a heavy gunmetal grey, scattered with dispersing night clouds. Above this appeared a wide rift in the iron sky. A dazzling strip of the brightest flame orange tore the greyness apart, and the scarlet orb of the sun began to rise. Already her reservations about taking on the Kenya Black inquiry had melted away. Today forensics should give them more on Shauna Kelly, and then they could plan a course of action. She was actually looking forward to her visit with Mr. Curbcrawler, and she always wanted to take a look at the area where Shauna had apparently gone into the water. She approached the road junction into the town and waited as a tractor, towing a trailer full of bright green broccoli, lumbered past. As she sat there, she silently prayed that Shauna's death had been a tragic accident and that it wasn't the precursor of things to come. By the time she eased the big motorbike into her parking space at the station, a hint of the tension of the night before had seeped back into her mind. Jackman had barely set foot in the CID room when he heard his name called out. The gravelly voice belonged to the superintendent's office manager.
"Sorry, sir, but can you go upstairs immediately?"
When he reached the super's office, Ruth Crook was waiting in the corridor.
"Listen," she said urgently. "I know you're not going to like what my visitor has to say, but I'm asking you to run with it, okay? And just remember, your present cases involve a missing girl and a dead girl. Hold that thought."
She then turned and, without waiting for a reply, pushed her door open and marched in. Standing by the window was a tall ramrod of a man wearing a chief superintendent's uniform. Jackman recognized him instantly. Cade worked out of one of the neighboring divisions and had the reputation of being a slimy bastard that it was best not to cross if you valued your career prospects.
"This is Detective Inspector Rowan Jackman, James."
The super gave a tight smile.
"Chief Superintendent Cade here has a problem over in the Harland Marshes area. A young woman has gone missing and both of their CID teams are tied up on another serious crime. He needs our help. Well, yours, to be precise."
Jackman wasn't too sure what he was supposed to say. Just yesterday he had been given a high priority, get us out of the ship before it hits the fan job, something to work alongside the death of Shauna Kelly. Now, he was being asked to forget about that and save another station's bacon because of their workload. Words failed him. Then he drew himself up and said, "Sorry, ma'am, but as you know, my caseload is not exactly light either. You will have to give it to another team. Even D.I. Feltham has enough staff to cope with that.